This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Come get some. Beware, IGN GameScoop. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. I'm joined this week by Justin Davis, Oop. Greg Miller,
Bowery Stan,
and Dan Stapleton.
Greeting noise.
We've got a great show planned for you today. We're going to talk about the console wars, although maybe not the one you're thinking about.
Oh, doctor.
We're going to talk about Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes, but first, we have reached the end of February 2014, which means it's time to pick a game of the month.
Yeah.
Next week, IGN will be selecting its game of the month. Let's talk about the contenders. We know who the contenders are, right? The games that are in the running?
Yes.
They would be Banished, Bravely Default, Danganronpa, Trigger Happy Havoc.
I believe it's called Danganronpa.
Donkey Kong Country, Tropical Freeze, Threes, and The Last of Us Left Behind.
Wait, what was the... Oh, those were two separate games. Tropical Freeze, comma, Threes.
Yes.
Comma. Donkey Kong, you know, Tropical Freeze, Threes. When Diddy Kong and Donkey Kong get a kid sister, Threes Company too.
Donkey Kong, Tropical Threes.
I'm able to go through these alphabetically. And Justin, you've been playing a lot of Banished.
Yeah, I was sort of the champion of Banished in the office. Although several people, I know Dan, you're digging it too, and Jared Petty likes
Dan
it.
Dan be digging it. Oh, here we go.
Dan digging it. Dan diggity digging it.
Please just talk about the game.
I thought they were going to laugh at it, Greg.
No.
It's a city building game. It's kind of like The Settlers. There's a bunch of stuff that I like about it, but one of the biggest things I like about it is that it's peaceful. Like, it's really, really hard. Like, they'll die of starvation or get diseases or you won't have enough firewood to survive through the winter. So it's
But
not...
they'll starve peacefully.
Right. So it's not an easy game, but I like that you're not, like, building up an army or
sure.
some, like, element of, like, invasion. Like, it's mainly just trying to sort of build up your town and keep these people alive and use sort of the natural resources to your advantage.
Yeah, it's a resource chain simulator.
Yeah.
Now, Greg is a big SimCity fan.
Right.
You would totally like this.
Yeah, I got excited about it when I heard about it. I haven't gotten the chance to download it yet. I've been busy.
And this is one of those games, sorry, this is one of those games that kind of sprung up in the opposition to the new SimCity that EA put out that really? Had some issues. And it does a lot of the things that SimCity claimed to do on a much larger scale. This keeps it small. Like, you've got between, you know, 10 and, like, 500 settlers, like, on
it
the high
It does get
end.
Up to over 1,000,
right?
Yeah.
So
if you're good enough, Dan.
And I am not. but it does you know, do the individual person tracking, and they've all got inventories to carry around. They've all got wants and needs they
exactly.
need to satisfy.
It's more like Tropico or a Dwarf Fortress, or we play Prison Architect, and it's actually pretty similar to that, in that if you, like, say, okay, I need to build a home here, the game just doesn't build the home. You have to have workers that then go gather the materials, then they go build the home. So you're kind of like a little bit more hands-off and just telling them like what to do instead of actually like plopping a building and building it yourself like a game like SimCity. It's awesome. Like, I like that your villagers get old and die and have kids, and that's how your population grows. Like, they don't fake the population at all. So you start with just these four families, and that'll grow into, like, over 1,000 people really sort of naturally and organically.
And a lot of incest.
Jesus. There is weird, we talked about this on the last Game Scoop, but like two, like if you build a new home, the game will automatically pick like two people to move into that home. And like there was once like a 12 and 13 year old just living in this home. They had a baby.
Well, it's not like it's modern times.
No, but she was a tailor. So he worked in the mines.
Yeah. What was their life expectancy? 35? Yeah. They got to get to it.
They don't have any time to waste.
Yeah.
It's made by just one dude. Is that what you said?
Right. And so, I mean, that's not really a consideration for Game of the Month. Like, we'll pick the best game, but just on a personal level, I think it's incredibly impressive that one dude made this entire game, like top to bottom himself. It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, and usually when you hear those, you know, one man made this things, it's like, well, yeah, one guy is like the only like actual staff developer, but he subcontracts a bunch of stuff out. Like one guy doing the art and the programming is really unusual, and the sound and everything.
I like the game runs really well, even on my laptop that's getting a little bit older. And like a lot of the weird little fiddly things that I don't like about, like building roads, for example, in SimCity was a nightmare. And I don't know how like a tiny indie game like this gets pathing and roads better than a giant game like SimCity. Well, but it does. Like
Its roads are very, very simple.
They're very simple, but like it just works the way that you would expect it to. Like, oh, is it going to be a problem to like put a road along this river? Like, no, but just figures it out. Like the game's really slick and sort of easy to control and use and play.
But that said, like I jumped in without having fiddled with the tutorial. I'm like, oh, I watched Justin play this a little bit. I get the idea.
I got this.
Nope. I couldn't even figure out how to collect resources.
No, everyone will starve and die.
You do want to go through that tutorial.
Yeah.
Well, we gave Banished an 8.3 here at IGN. And we've talked about Bravely Default a whole lot here on GameScoop. Everybody seems to agree that game is awesome. Dan, I saw you playing it the other day.
Yeah,
did you get very far?
I'm just not a big like JRPG guy.
Yeah,
like, I do. No, it's like I actually like the mechanics. A lot of the kind of very Japanese aesthetic throws me off. I can't really get invested in those worlds or characters, so it's hard for me to get into that type of game.
We gave Bravely Default an 8.6.
I just got a copy of Bravely Default, but I need a bigger SD card to download.
That happened to me too. So, I had to order one off Amazon.
Yeah, so mine's on its way from Amazon.
Yeah.
And so I can't speak to it firsthand, but I know that one of the things that some of the people in the office love about it is that it sort of streamlines the things that are just a pain in JRPGs. Like, you can, the random battle rate, you can crank it down to zero. So if you're like, look, I just want to advance the story, I'm
going to plan my battles.
Well, sure. I mean, if you like don't, like, there's just situations where you're like, I just want to make it to town.
Right, I just got to get over there and buy this, save this.
Yeah. Or I just need to save my game. Or if you're like deep in a dungeon, you realize you're not going to make it, like crank the random battles to zero and you can walk right back out. And there's no real reason not to do that. Like, I don't know why a game wouldn't give you that control over it. And I know it does like really innovative stuff with street passing to, you know, give the game this sort of cool, innovative use there, too. So I'm totally looking forward to jumping into it.
Now, our own Colin Moriarty has been singing the praises of Danganronpa.
Danganronpa.
Trigger Happy Havoc.
That Danganronpa over there! Yeah, Phoenix Wright mashup with some JRPG tendencies.
Yeah.
Sounds like fun to me.
I know Mitch was not digging that.
Really?
Mitch tweeted about it last night that he was not enjoying himself.
Does not care for the writing. He likes the premise, which is like a murder mystery.
Right.
And it sounds really interesting. I'm gonna give it a shot, although it does seem like it has that very Japanese aesthetic that
yeah, exactly. It's a turn off to you. Yeah.
But it souns like a really cool idea with the
Different kids are put into this school. They each have a special ability. They're like, you know, this is the best person at this. This is the best person at that.
Like X-Men.
Similar, yes, I think so. I don't know if they all have mutant abilities. I believe some of them are just like, I'm the best singer or something stupid like that.
Well, that's not like X-Men at all.
Well, it's like a class.
It's like Banshee. Banshee was the best singer.
Oh. Exactly, exactly.
That's pretty good.
And then, yeah, to get out, they have to solve a murder or something like that. I don't know. Colin doesn't get X-Men.
I totally think, like, this is one that I love Phoenix Wright. I loved Hotel Dusk on the Nintendo DS. And, like, that game had very light gameplay. Like, it did have some puzzle solving, but it was mainly just, like, going through this, you know, sort of visual novel. So, you know, I think we should see more of this kind of thing in America. I'd like to.
Well, yeah, especially, I mean, like, he's talking, you know, Colin always compares it that it's the mashup of Phoenix Wright meets Virtue's Last Reward. So one of those, yeah, you know, a narrative driven with this goofy subtext to it.
Colin, give that an 8.5. Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, we gave a 9. That game is really impressive.
It looks really cool. I don't know. I'm I don't see it doing a whole lot of new platformer stuff.
Mm. Like, did you figure out how to jump?
I did figure out.
I was there yesterday when you walked over and you go, Jose, how do I jump? I've hit every button. There was no jumping.
There was a problem with my controller.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, man. But with the Wii U? Really? It's weird.
But no,
it's a poor craftsman that blames his tools.
It looks really cool. Like the Donkey Kong's fur has never looked better, I'm told. But yeah, I don't know.
Can that be on the back of the box?
Yeah. Yes. A lot of the mechanics are you know, there's a little bit interesting spins on it. I don't know. It's not really grabbing me. It's not like, oh my God, I've never played anything like this before in a platformer.
Yeah, I mean, this is a game that got a 9. Jose loved it. There's other platformer fans in the office that love it, but then it is one that's getting some mixed. You know, other people are kind of like, yeah, it's very, very pretty and like kind of polished, but it feels, you know, it doesn't feel that like special. That's the feedback that some people have, is that it just feels like the same platformer that we've all played, you know, a lot of times.
And the co-op don't really make no sense to me.
Like,
yeah.
Just co-op make no sense.
Sure.
It's a little weird.
I don't know how much I would like pick on a game for that, because it's like just, you know, don't play co-op.
Yeah, don't play co-op.
But sure. It does feel, you know, more tacked on than in a game like Mario. Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in the office are playing Threes.
Yeah.
Yep.
On their iPhone and iPad, myself included. I love that game. I can't beat Justin's score.
Nope.
Justin's is a 3 whiz.
You can.
What was your score?
It's actually not. It's like 10 or 11,000.
Okay, I haven't beaten that.
Yeah. Alex Solomita is actually the Threes guy in the office.
Really? He's like the dumbest one of them.
I mean, look at how fun the game looks.
Damon, why don't you explain? You're always letting us talk on games.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't played it, I highly recommend it, first of all, if you're interested in a game for your iPhone, iPad. First of all, you can play. It's one of the few iPhone games you can play with one hand while you're commuting or on the bus or whatever.
Or peeing.
Or peeing.
Yeah. But I guess the gist of it is, you know, you have number tiles on the board, and then you swipe either left, right, up, or down in order to combine numbers in multiples of threes, and that's it. Like, you just try to create, you know, the highest numbers on the board before the board is full up and there's no more room for new tiles.
Right, so like ones and twos will come in from the four corners, and you can combine them into a three, and then two threes make a six, and two sixes make a 12, and so on. And it reminds me of, do you remember when everybody in the office was like obsessed with Triple Town?
Yeah.
So it's a totally different puzzle mechanic, but it's similar in the sense that you have this board filling up, and then you need to combine things in order to free up space.
Exactly.
And so threes is very similar. Like, it starts out easy combining threes and sixes, but once you have like a 192, then it's like it's really, really hard to like position another one there to combine it together.
It's brilliant. Great.
And like one of the things that's the craziest about this game is, like, if you're playing it with the sound off, you're just missing out on an incredible amount of detail that doesn't really matter, but they somehow managed to give numbers, like numbered cards, personality.
Yeah.
Like that was something I played probably my first, you know, 8 or 9 rounds with the sound off, and I turned it on. It's like, holy crap! There's all this stuff going on here.
The numbers are going hello.
Yeah, like they're kind of adorable.
Yeah, they'll do things like, when two numbers get next to each other that can combine and make a new number, they get like a little excited.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, like try to get these 2 48s together and combine them. And
even if you try to swipe in a direction where you can't go anymore, sometimes the cards will be like, nope.
Yep. Yeah. Or they're like, nah. Yeah. It's really cute.
Yeah, and they managed to avoid being repetitive too, because they've got like multiple recordings of each you know variation on each kind of a little emote they have. It's really, really well done. And the music is good too. It's like this French. Like French cafe accordion music. It's
that level of polish is way higher than it needed to be.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
It's amazing.
Wasn't it made by one of the artists on Ridiculous Fishing, or the artist maybe?
Yeah, it's another one of these. We've seen more and more iOS games that come from like indie supergroups, I guess you could almost call them. Where it's one of the guys that made a great puzzle game called Puzzle Juice, and then another guy that worked on Ridiculous Fishing, and the music guy has done, you know, other good music as well.
Yeah. So Dan, this game is great. Everybody's playing it, but IGN hasn't reviewed it.
It's actually really hard to review puzzle games.
Yeah.
Like, and because it's an iOS game, those kind of live on in perpetuity. We don't feel like super rushed to get to it.
Okay.
But we are working on one.
Good.
Like it's really hard to describe these games in a way that isn't just like, here is what this game is. You know, you have to kind of break down what it does that's good, and that takes some work.
Threes is the first game I played on my phone in probably over a year that's made me, I haven't actually missed my bus stop yet, but I've been that close to missing my bus stop, because I'm like so absorbed in, when you get, it starts out super easy and fast, you know, like swipe, 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 just really quickly, but then you really need to like think hard about like the optimal move when you get later in the game. And I look up and I'm like, oh, I'm at 3rd Street, and I have to like run off the bus real fast.
You got to start planning like 3 or 4 moves ahead, or you lose miserably like I do.
Yeah, it's got a great sort of difficulty curve.
Fun fact, Justin and I used the same bus stop.
Wow.
Finally, The Last of Us Left Behind also got a 9 this month. It is apparently really good.
It is. You played it yet?
I haven't.
I haven't played it yet. It's about the rapture, right?
Right, exactly. This is the Kurt Cameron tie-in we've all been waiting for.
Will you spoil the whole thing for us?
Sure.
No, don't, actually.
That's the tough part about it, is like, obviously, what makes it awesome and really cool is all the stuff you don't know about and don't want to know about, right? Like, it's more of the narrative-driven focus we were looking for. And some of the way it ties into the core game is really interesting. You know what I mean? Like, beforehand, they were like, oh, it's a prequel. And everybody's like, oh, cool, can I play it? And like, no, play it before you play the real game. Play the real game, play this. And it's like, okay, I guess, whatever. But then the way they interact between Ellie and Riley, right? Their whole dynamic of two girls exploring this abandoned mall, obviously, that's been run over, and the stuff they do there and the way they comment on what, you know, popular society would have been like back there. And like, they're finding all these... Their stuff is very much just walking around being girls and talking to each other, being reunited after a long time apart. It's very interesting.
And like Colin's, one of Colin's main criticisms of it, you know, he obviously really loved it.
Yeah.
But one of his main criticisms of it was that he didn't think it needed the combat.
Right. Yeah, I agree 100%. Like you know, we always talk about this, like, why do game designers and developers always want to make their final battle so tough so that your final remembrance of this game is F this game.
Or just like different and terrible than all the other battles in the game, like all the Uncharted games.
he drank blue Seth. That made perfect sense. No, that was the thing for me. Like, the one thing I had about it is like the very end combat sequence is super annoying. At least it was for me. It was one, I mean, granted, it took me like 3 tries, but it's one of those like, I finally, this is still going on? Oh, and you die like a cheap way, or you just get ambushed, like, come on.
Yeah, that is a frequent, I don't know why, it happens so often that I'm not sure why game developers are so like blind to it. Like, BioShock Infinite has a terrible final section.
You're talking about the BioShock, the original BioShock has just an awful final boss.
Yep,
that's true.
That's like a legendary bad boss fight.
You wish more developers, right, were, this is the tale we're telling, and this is how it goes, and this is how it ends, you have to worry about it. Even the Last of Us main campaign, in the run up to like the last like real chunk of gameplay you have was so annoying and so I can't believe I'm doing this, and it's just frustrating when you get through a great game like that and you find this one thing is like, oh my god, I want to kill myself.
And one other thing that Left Behind does.
I did.
One other thing that Left Behind does, and we saw a little bit of it there in the footage up there, was that it pits the infected and the humans against each other more.
Yeah.
So like when you play through the original Last of Us, you never really see them fighting.
Mm-hmm.
It's always you versus one or the other. This is you drawing them into fighting each
other. This is the tutorial right here of Ellie walking into this area where she finds some clickers, and then all of a sudden regular bad guys, people walk up and she's able to turn them on each other.
That's pretty clever. Like I'm actually disappointed they didn't do that in the
campaign. You do that, you're like, oh yeah, that's I never playing through, you know, the disc, the story of The Last of Us, I was never like, oh, that's weird, that never happens. You don't think about it. But when they added it here, you're like, oh, that is great to throw a bottle, have the guys react to it, run to it, and then also the, you know, clickers and monsters run to it as well.
Yeah, like anything that can add combat variety to a game, I think is a fantastic thing. Because usually you're just doing the same thing over and over and over again, and like something like that can really break it up and make you think of it in a different way.
Yeah.
This is the one game add-on that's up for Game of the Month.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Maybe that's not as interesting as I thought.
Why is it interesting to you, Damon?
Oh, I just say, I guess, you know, I was saying I haven't played it yet, but I guess it's significant enough. It feels big enough to compete against.
It's one of those, if they could have, they could easily have released that, I think, as like a standalone. That, you know, like you just download it and play it rather than have to have the disc. And
almost
it.
Like Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes.
Yeah. Jumping the gun there a little bit. Don't put up that B-roll yet.
Put up a B-roll of your daughter, Rancy. Go ahead, I dare you. I know it's you're waiting.
All right, so those are the games, the 6 games that are up for Game of the Month this month. The editorial staff will be playing them over the weekend, considering them carefully, and then the award will be given out when? Next week? Next Friday?
Next Friday.
Okay. Which will be March something.
Yeah, March 7th, I think.
Sounds right.
This is great. March is awesome. I can't wait to get to March.
You think March is going to...
March is going to be phenomenal. Are you
crazy? Drop it on us. Drop it on us.
This will all be chump change. We won't be talking about
I said drop it on us. What's coming in March?
Middle
I know this Titanfall.
Yeah. I mean, think of it this way. You got South Park next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Titanfall the week after that.
Yeah.
Metal Gear. And then the other one, Infamous Second Son.
Oh, yeah.
There's rumors, like a long time ago, I guess, when they announced Minecraft for PS4, they said March, so some people are still holding. I hope that's happening. I'll believe when I see it. Dark Souls 2.
Yeah.
March is huge.
Yeah.
March is awesome.
Well, before we get to March.
March.
Hold on.
March. March. March.
I've been overruled.
There's actually a lot of games that came out this month in February that just didn't make much of a splash.
Yeah, there were games that we thought, you know, when we were planning Game of the Month or just coverage in general that we thought would be big deals that then weren't.
I mean, we got the second episode of Wolf Among Us, which was very good.
Yeah,
yeah, sure.
You know,
so, like Marty loves that series. It's yeah. He thought this episode was, you know, almost as good as the first.
I loved episode one. The gap between one and two made me decide I'm gonna wait till they're all out, and then I'm gonna play through the rest.
Bold choice.
That's actually what I'm doing with both this and
Walking Dead.
I'm sleeping on Walking Dead for that same
reason. You may have to wait for the entire year, right? Like they're kind of slow about it.
Yeah, Telltale keeps saying they're gonna be better now. Mm. They keep saying they're like, you know, it was the holiday, the new year got dropped in the middle there, which kind of screwed things up for them. But they're claiming they're gonna be on a better structure this going forward.
I mean, I don't hear, you know, maybe it's just because I decided to wait to play it, but I don't hear as many people talking about The Wolf Among Us as a game like Walking Dead. And if you're not playing it, man, you totally should be. Wolf Among Us Episode 1 was so good.
Yes.
But you just said they should wait.
No, I'm saying I'm waiting. Other people can do what they want, but for me, I don't want to wait. I just want to experience it, you know, all in like one evening or a couple evenings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fable Anniversary came out this month. Nobody's talking about that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's Fable, you know. Yeah. It's something that, you know, everybody's already experienced. So yeah, it's not, and the upgrade is visual primarily. It's got like the Lost Chapter stuff in there. It's not something that anybody was really like, oh my God, I need to go play Fable again.
Yeah, a wise man once said, old game is old. So you don't need to worry about all these anniversaries and re-releases.
That said, if you hadn't played it, like this is the way to do it. Like don't bust out an old original Xbox or, you know, even necessarily play it on PC because the PC version still has the old textures and everything. Mm-hmm. This is the way to do it.
Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare is out now.
Yep.
Just came out this week.
Today? No, today's Wednesday. Sorry, yesterday. I've missed a day in my week, so I've...
We gave it a 7.8.
Yep. We liked Brian liked it a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't hear people talking about it.
Well, I played it last night for a bit.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
See you later.
It's one of those games that does a lot of things really well. Like, and look at the models of these characters. Like, that was something I just did not expect when I heard they were going to do a shooter based on Plants vs. Zombies.
It's really charming.
You just weren't expecting the level of
detail.
Yeah,
okay. I mean, it's amazing the quality of these character models, and the maps are very pretty too. And the one of the things Brian really liked about it was how well they adapted the ideas of these characters to a shooter. Like, to me, it's still kind of absurd that you've got plants running around, like just kind of absurd, but.
And the zombies. I guess I'd never even actually thought about that until this moment.
And the zombies, which in the original Plants vs. Zombies games are very slow moving, and now everybody's running around. It makes no sense, but it's very pretty, and it is a very competently made shooter. They've got some good ideas in there. You know, it'll kind of remain to be seen like how they develop it. You know, if it has any real staying power, probably not. Like it's a. Well, no, I mean...
No, I'm with you. I'm with you that I don't think it's a game that's going to find an install base and a really hardcore following. And no, it's something right now that's out and distracting people on their Xbox One.
Wait, is it full price?
You know, I don't know. I think it's $30.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit... I think it's a little bit value bargain price.
Yeah, it's either $30 or $40.
I'd like to see them go more in that direction. This strikes me as a game that could have gotten the Team Fortress 2 treatment. Mm-hmm. It's like if this were freemium, like a really high-end... free-to-play Xbox shooter where, like, you get your console, you can download this for free, then, you know, maybe half the classes are behind a paywall, you know, or whatever.
Well, that's not what Team Fortress does.
No, it's not. But, you know, I guess it could sell zombie hats. Or just some sort of freemium system that doesn't actually affect the gameplay, as long as you're not, like, buying power-ups. This is something that could have a lot of staying power.
They have launched without any kind of microtransactions, but they will add them. And the way they seem to be moving towards doing that is something very similar to the Mass Effect 3 multiplayer, which was actually very, very well done.
Yeah, sure.
And like that's one where I didn't feel like I was buying power, and I actually never put any money into it at all. But if I had, I wouldn't feel like I was buying power, just buying access to things a little faster. I actually really like that kind of bonus pack feel you get when it's like the feeling of opening a foil pack of cards. Mm-hmm. You don't know what you're gonna get.
Sure, like Hearthstone, like
yeah, like
or whatever game.
Yeah, like
Madden Ultimate Team.
Yeah,
Ultimate Team.
Like going back to Magic the Gathering and whatever else. It's like you get that pack. There's that little suspense of opening it. It's like, what do I get? It's like, oh, I'm gonna get lucky this time. Oh, I didn't get lucky this time. I'll go try again. you know, it's kind of has that little gambling urge to it.
I mean, a game that's multiplayer focused like that, or exclusively multiplayer, is only as good as the community of people playing it. And so that's why free works so good in MMOs and shooters, where in some genres I don't think it's as interesting or as fun.
Very true.
Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13 came out, and while I think a lot of us are experiencing Final Fantasy 13 fatigue, Marty thought the game was good. He gave it a 7.
Yeah, and
good for Marty.
He thought the story was a big letdown.
Yeah,
but he does like the combat quite a bit.
Yep, I mean that's basically it. Incoherent story, world design. The whole game it sounds very very so-so, except the battle system is supposed to be so good.
Yeah.
So it's like if that's why you play RPGs, man, like this is probably right up your alley.
But Dan, you reviewed Thief.
Yeah,
it
yeah, I did.
Stole your heart.
Yeah, I detected it trying to steal my heart.
No, it's just stole your time.
And then stabbed it in the face. Mm.
You gave Thief a 6.8.
Yeah, and it's like a 6 to 6.9 means it's okay. Mm-hmm. Like it does some real dumb stuff. The story is not worth your time. The level design is iffy. Like some of the levels are pretty good. Most of them are very bland and samey. The stealth mechanic itself is actually pretty well done.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like I was like the guys would unfairly spot me. The guards move with the predictability that you have to have in a stealth game. Like it's actually pretty funny hearing people complain about the AI in a stealth game like this, because if the AI were smart, everyone would hate it. Because you don't want an AI to find you all the time and act like really smart people.
I mean, this is true in every video game. It's doubly true in stealth games, where like the AI is walking on this tightrope of like if they're too smart and relentless, then you're never gonna have any fun. Anytime you get spotted, is an instant reload.
Yeah.
But if they're too dumb, then it just feels like you're going through the motions, and that's not fun either.
Yeah. And that said, this AI is not spectacular by any means. Like I did see it get caught on things, but. Sure.
I agree with everything Dan's saying. If people are really hyped about this game and now they feel like they're not going to buy it, you should still consider giving it a shot. I like the world building a lot. I mean, Dan's right that the actual story that you progress through in the game is not especially interesting, but the overarching story, or like the city that you're in and this disease that is affecting everybody, and some of the different players in the game and locations, I like that world building a lot, and I'm really intrigued and fascinated by it.
I find it absolutely pales in comparison to everything Dishonored did in that regard.
Well, I mean, when you describe it that way, it sounds like Dishonored, right?
Yeah,
I mean, they're very similar for sure.
Greg, you spent time with it too.
I'm not saying it's a great game, but if someone told me that they enjoyed it a lot, I would understand.
There's one other thing.
Justin's wrong. Don't listen to Justin Davis.
The one other thing I want to point out is that the central city hub that you have to run back and forth across to reach your objectives is a total disaster. It's awful. Like it's everything looks the same, so it's hard to find your way around, even with the minimap. It looks like you can go through some areas you can't, and then you just get frustrated and have to go around. And probably the worst thing about it is the load time.
That's what I was going to bring up as well.
Right. So you'll like Jimmy open a window.
Oh, there's an apartment here. I'll go in. Wait, there's just a bathtub and one gold piece. I got to go back. I'm loading in and out of this. What the hell is going on?
The
and
load times are so long that it discourages. You won't want to explore areas. Yep.
Yeah, it's like if I go in there, maybe I'll find something, but I'll have to sit through like a full minute of loading time to get in and out.
The game also has some weird technical issues besides the load times. It just feels clunky. It feels clunky, and it doesn't feel like, the super smoothed edges of, like, a AAA game.
Right. Well, for me, it's like I put in my PS4, and, like, the cutscenes are running poorly.
Oh,
like, the
so
load
bad.
Times are terrible. Then for me, I was telling Dan, like, my big thing was, like, I'm going through, and I'm trying to be stealthy, not get caught. And, like, I'd go into a room that Jimmy opened, come into these, like, rooms, and I'd hear people talking.
Right.
And I'm like, all right around the corner, there's somebody. And I'd go around the corner, and nobody was there, and there was no door out of the place, just the window I came in. And I'm on the second story, so... People on the ground are speaking on the ground, and it's coming up to the second story into the room. It's like, what
is... In some area that's not in the same loaded area that you're in.
Crystal clear. They sound like they're right next to you. It's like, what is going
on? There's technical issues like that definitely, if the game were better, maybe it wouldn't detract from them as much as it does, but it does just sort of drag down the overall fun that you're going to have.
And there are performance issues on all four consoles that it's on, which... It's not that big a deal, like for the gameplay experience, because it is a very slow-paced game. Like you're not probably going to get screwed up by a dropped frame here or there. but it's annoying and it's ugly and it doesn't. It's really surprising on a you know new high end console.
Yeah. I don't find the controls intuitive either.
It takes a little getting used to.
I do. I didn't dislike it as much as you two.
I didn't dislike it.
You said it was okay, bordering on good.
Yeah. Like there's enough in there that like if they had just nailed if it didn't have that awful central city, good game. Mm. But it's not.
See, I don't have the huge. Besides the loading, I don't mind the central city. I think it feels like a dirty, grimy, you know, relatively realistic place. And I like that you're like sort of above people, and I like those sort of conversations you can overhear. I like a lot of the game's ideas, and then I find the execution so-so.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2, also out this month.
That's getting kind of savaged
by
pretty much everybody. Yeah, that's just a shame.
That's a shame.
Maybe they can get back to more traditional Castlevania games. I don't know.
Because I know like Colin really wanted to love this game.
He loved the first one.
Yeah.
And like it just moved so far away from everything he wanted it to be, or everything that he loved about the first one. And you know, like I can sympathize with developers wanting to try something different and not remake the same game over and over again. But they lack the atmosphere that he likes from the previous ones that impressed him so much there. It has stealth sequences that he just absolutely hates. Yeah,
some of the worst stealth sequences in video gaming.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's Thief has some pretty good stealth. This, not so much.
Bad story, bad characters. Mm-hmm. The combat is totally fine, but it is derivative. Like, it's not really doing anything original there either.
Yeah, Colin equates it to God of War.
Yep. Which, I mean, God of War combat's great, but it's still like that can't save a game when the rest of it's not mm-hmm. working.
Finally, Rambo the video game.
Oh!
Came out this month. IGN gave it a 3. I can't believe that game. Like, I saw...
Out of 3?
Yeah. I saw... It's an on-rails... It's like what you would see at the arcade or at the movie theater, the arcade games.
I don't even think I've seen this.
Yeah,
this looks so bad.
He's just gunning down cops on rails. Yeah. This is what the game.
Wait,
is.
Why is he killing cops? Are they?
He's
bad
a bad
cops?
Guy. He's a Rambo.
That's in the first Rambo. He's like trying to escape the local cops.
I mean, is that what this is?
It's not just him mercilessly gunning down every cop in his way.
Well, it kind of is.
Anyway, I saw an ad for this game at Gamescom like 3 years ago. I didn't think it would ever actually come out.
But. Yeah. Yep. And now they proved you wrong. Just to get your craw.
Just to spite me. Anyway, this game is out now for 360 and PS3 if you want to.
It's on PC as well.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
It makes me want to play Time Crisis.
Makes me want that genre to never come back.
What?
Just stay away from it. So we're all agreed. Danganronpa. where the kids are trying to kill someone. But I don't remember how that factors into the Phoenix Wright gameplay.
I thought they were trying not to be killed by somebody.
No, I think that they get to leave if they kill somebody without getting caught. Mm. But I understand still then how it becomes an eternity thing. I'm saving it. I want a Platinum Persona this year. I'm trying to focus on that. I don't have time for another.
You got priorities.
I know.
Anyway, that was February in a nutshell of gaming.
Sucked.
How would
March
we rate,
is going to be so much better.
How would we rate the month of February for gaming? Is it a 6.8? Is it okay?
I give it a flat 7.
It's good then.
Yeah, it was good. You went through a lot of great games there. Bravely Default alone, right? Everybody loves.
Yeah.
Thousands of hours of gameplay.
Yeah. And for my personal interest, actually, probably it would be around a 6.8. I mean, like there are a few good games, but there wasn't really a bright shiny spot in this month. Like Banished, I like. Yeah. I had stuff to play. Like, it's not a game where it's like, oh my god, what am I gonna, or a month where I'm gonna say, oh my god, I've got nothing to play. This is a terrible mm-hmm. month. But it's not, I was not showered with riches. I wouldn't say, yeah, February was a good month for gaming.
Again, I stand with Dan.
High five.
See, like, the best game I played this month is coming out next month. So it's like, well.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I think you should have a t-shirt made that says, I stand with Dan. Yeah.
I will, from now on. I'll be your VP.
All right.
All right, so Greg, you're really excited about March.
Yeah.
For gaming.
March is going to be the bomb.
Let's talk about a game that's coming out in March. Metal Gear Solid 5, dun, 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 Ground Zeroes. You're a big Metal Gear fan.
Yeah. Taking a day off for this one. Can't wait.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, life stops when Ground Zeroes arrives.
Yeah. Greg is going to grind up those zeros and snort them.
Yeah. They say the game's only 2 hours long. I'm going to make it 24 hours. I'm going to play that game 12 times.
I'm anxious to see what's happening with Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah.
Let me put this out there first.
Okay.
But surely you can agree that the whole concept of Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes is confusing.
It's the way that it locks, it goes to Phantom Pain? Like the way they've broken up Metal Gear Solid 5 into the Metal Gear Solid 5 experience.
Yeah.
Yes,
the first
bizarre.
Is a 2-hour game that they wanted to ask that they're asking $40 for, and now they just lowered the price for the next gen.
Sure, well, they've gotten so much flack
right?
for
it's just
it.
Like it's just confusing to me.
Yeah,
from what I hear though, it's not actually just like 2 hours and you're done.
No, there's a whole bunch of extra. It's you know, you're in this open world-esque base where you're going around. So it's like, you know, Ryan Scott tweeted about how, and so did Mitch actually, how much this game is like Peace Walker. And how, for Peace Walker, if you didn't play it, there's a main story campaign, but as you progress, you unlock, you know, outer ops and secondary ops to go through that can be target practice or just VIP missions and going through and doing these different things. You can replay the mission that you did for the story to get a better score. That's what I'm expecting out of this. I'm expecting it to be, the story itself is 2 hours long, however it's been quoted at, but when you get out there, there's going to be different reasons to replay missions or different reasons to go off on these little side missions. I don't know how much juice you're going to get out of the orange.
But is it weird that they're releasing this first to retail for $30?
No. What are Konami's other huge money-making franchises?
So that they just need it?
I would think so. Wouldn't you?
That's my question.
Wouldn't you? Everything they do is underperforming.
I don't understand. Well, I haven't got.
They just released Castlevania Lords of Shadow.
Sure, but even before that, I mean, it's just one of those things where I think they look at the bottom line and they're like,
and Fantapain
isn't doing as well as we wanted it to.
Fantapain doesn't have a release date yet.
Right.
That's so it's like, well, we don't know when this is going to be done. Can we put something out?
Exactly.
So do you think, I've heard the PR answer. Do you think that's the true, no one's giving me a true,
what's
real
the PR answer? The PR answer is that we want to make an experience?
No, the answer is, why does this exist? I'm so confused about why Ground Zeroes is a thing that exists. Like, it's just crazy to me. Like, has there ever been anything like this?
No, but I'm asking for the viewers at home, what's the PR answer? What does PR say to that question?
You know, because the world of Metal Gear Solid 5 Phantom Pain is such a huge, new, strange open world that this is going to bridge the gap between Peace Walker and Metal Gear Solid 5.
Okay.
And it's this product
and
that
Kojima
exists
has said
that and orients them in that world.
You know, it's going to take some time to finish Phantom Pain. He wants to get something out there sooner.
Yeah. But I mean, like, what worries me about what you just said, Justin, what you paraphrase them saying,
sure,
is that, does that mean in order to play Metal Gear Solid 5,
right,
I need to play this? I need to buy two things.
I have
things
so
in order
many
for this
questions. Like, what happens if you don't play this and jump right into 5?
Right.
Are you going to be lost then? Like,
I think that stands for any Metal Gear game, but pretty much most. Any Metal Gear game. This is what I'm always talking about when you do the PlayStation 3 list, right? The top 25 we do at IGN. Mm-hmm. Historically, we've kept Metal Gear Solid 4 off that list. It got a 10. I was the secondary opinion on it. Jeff Haynes reviewed it, but I was the one saying, yep, I love Metal Gear Solid. This is a 10. It is. A Metal Gear Solid 4 is a 10 to Metal Gear Solid fans. If you are just, hey, I just bought a PS3. I've never played a Metal Gear. Do not play Metal Gear Solid 4. Go read an entire novel about Metal Gear. Then you're ready to play 4. Otherwise, you don't get any of the references.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of people slept on Peace Walker, as much as I beat that PSP drum. And I think they're going to come in being like, I don't understand what's happening. And like,
Greg Miller's favorite game of all time.
Favorite game of the generation. Favorite game of all time. Lock. Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker.
So
clearly I'm stoked. Metal Gear Solid next gen.
I think the game looks awesome.
Yeah,
every time
sure.
I see it, like, I totally want to play it.
I do agree with that. I'm just confused. You know, there's me complaining about this as a product, like as a business decision, and then it's like as a game. I think as a game it looks super cool. I'm just weirded out by why it exists.
I think it's totally bizarre. I think the rollout plan has been bizarre. I forget who on Twitter pointed it out yesterday, but it was like, Konami's official press release comes out, and the subject line on it is Konami leaks Metal Gear Solid. You're like, no, you don't leak your own information to the press, to everyone in an official press release. That's not how it works.
The thought that I did have after we sort of decided this was going to be a topic for GameScoop was, it's almost like DLC that comes out before the game.
A couple of people were saying that, yeah.
And so once I sort of thought about it that way, it sort of oriented me in a different headspace where, like, Left Behind comes out, you get a little chunk of gameplay after a video game, and it tells a little different side story. And this is like that, but it's before the game. And I'm like, well, I don't know that that's, like, smart. It makes a lot of sense. But at least I sort of, it orients me in the right headspace to get what this is now.
It's one of the, I mean, sadly, we probably will never know all the behind closed doors how this came to be. But yeah, we always talk about, you know, okay, Sony Santa Monica just laid off a whole bunch of people.
Yep.
Last week, Irrational laid off a bunch of people. There are real business concerns to making games. So how long has he been working on this since Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker, right? They started that Fox engine that they've been showing forever and ever and ever. That's years and years of development time, millions of dollars. They need to get a return on it somehow. So that's what, I mean, like, I totally believe it's a mixture of, they're like, you have to put something out. And he's like, okay, like, this is what we can do. I'd imagine you look at it right, it strikes me as the tanker from Metal Gear Solid 2, where, you know, you play the Snake, and then it gets destroyed, you come back, and you ride, and there's that big reveal, but that was one game broken into two parts. Even Metal Gear Solid 3, right? You start off, you go off, you do your thing, then there's, like, the nuclear explosion or everything, then the game starts proper, like, it's real story. This strikes me as probably designed to be the same way. Like, I mean, what do you think's going to happen at the end of this? If you've seen the Phantom Pain trailer, spoiler alert, he's going to get effed up bad.
He gets messed
he's
up because he wakes up in the hospital.
Wake up in a, some veteran's hospital, and there's going to be goddamn spirit whale for no reason. I don't know. But, like,
remember when they announced that? How confusing that was?
Totally. Well, and that's the other thing. Yeah. This has been the most confusing campaign reveal of all time.
Kojima.
Yeah, exactly, right?
Do you think that they lowered the price? It was going to be $40, and they announced on next-gen.
But it's so confusing. The retail, the next-gen retail version was going to be $40, $10 more than everything else. So they lowered that to it. So it, I think they're all $30.
So it's $30, but digital was always going to be $30.
Yeah, yeah.
And so do you think, why do you think they did that?
Backlash. I think the fact that it came out and everyone was super vocal. I mean, like, we're not the only people saying this is a confusing campaign to begin with. The fact that it was too expensive, a lot of people were saying. And then the fact that, like, trust me, they wanted to keep the two-hour thing hidden as long as possible.
Yeah.
And it got out too early, probably.
And it's $20 on the current-gen consoles, right? Digitally, I think,
Yeah, that's right.
I thought it was 30, no?
Isn't it? I thought it was...
No one has any idea.
Well, don't buy it on current-gen.
I might have read...
Current-gen
is dead. I was reading
it's all about current-gen.
No, well, last-gen is dead.
Current-gen is current-gen, and last-gen is now-gen.
On PS3 and 360, I thought the digital version was $20, but that might have been old info.
I can check for you if you want. Damn, I'll let me use the phone.
Anyway, I am very excited to check it out.
Yeah.
It looks really
cool.
You
want to take a day off with me? We can get two TVs, put them side by side, put headphones on?
Greg, we can finish it on our lunch break, apparently.
You took a two-hour lunch break?
Yeah, we got it.
Okay. Today, the console wars rage on between...
So many lives lost.
PS4 and Xbox One. Console wars are not a new thing, though. They've been raging almost as long as gaming has been a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Originally... The original console war was Sega versus Nintendo.
Yeah.
We all see who won that one.
Pretty much in the 90s, because, you know, in the 80s there was the NES and Master System, but there was just not really much of a war happening there.
No.
Greg was only like Greg and three other people had a Master System.
I was mesmerized by this advertisement.
I know. Sorry,
the best, I don't know.
Well, so look, this is a Genesis commercial. They put Mario Kart in their commercial and made it look all clunky.
Ballsy. They did the commercial that I saw was a kid playing a Game Boy, a black and white Game Boy, and he looks so bored, and he's like, ugh. And then he picks up, he sees a dead squirrel on the ground, and he picks up a dead squirrel, and he hits himself in the head, and he starts, like, seeing in color. Then it's like, there's a better way to play video games in color, and then it's all these really fast, flashy Game Gear graphics.
Yeah, Game Gear.
Oh, man, I had a Game Gear.
Yeah, me too.
Ugh.
So
the console wars were crazy back then. Like, they were making fun of, they're like, if you like the Super Nintendo, you're an asshole.
This is a commercial for the original NES. This is like when it was first released.
Let's just make this the rest of GameScoop now.
Watch all commercials.
Yeah.
Get the Phil Hartman NHL one.
Extra games sold separately. So the reason why we're talking about this is they announced this week Sony Pictures is going to develop a movie based on the 90s console wars, Sega versus Nintendo. This is all based on a novel that's coming up soon. It's not released yet. The novel is called...
It is kind of hilarious that it's Sony making this.
Well, Sony Pictures.
Sure.
Yeah. The book is called Console Wars, Sega, Nintendo, and the Battle That Defined a Generation.
It would get heated in the schoolyard.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you would deny. You would... Like, I had a Sega Genesis. I didn't have a Super Nintendo. So I had to do everything in my power to make those Super Nintendo games seem terrible. But I would deny that, like, that's why I was doing it.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah.
like, no, that game just looks like it's just bad, right? Like, the Genesis is the right one.
So we know about this. You know, you talk about the battle in the schoolyard. We talk about the commercials.
Yeah.
That's the part that we all know about. But I think the movie's going to focus on... It says focus on the small and scrappy Sega and the company's aspirations to take on Nintendo. I think this is going to be like backroom business dealings.
It's going to be like Pirates of Silicon Valley.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And Michael Anthony Hall.
I think this movie could be really fascinating.
Yeah, totally.
I'm sure there were all kinds of dirty tricks being played there just trying to outmaneuver the other guy.
I read about, it actually wasn't, ironically, it was Sony when the PlayStation first started. E3 1995 was the PlayStation's big reveal. and some Sony dudes deflated the giant Sonic the Hedgehog that was outside of E3 that year.
Nice. It's being developed by Sony and a guy named Scott Rudin, who developed The Social Network, which was also a movie that when it was announced, I thought that sounded like they're making a movie about Facebook. That's going to be really boring.
Can they,
but
get,
I love,
can they get Trent Reznor?
Can they get Aaron Sorkin to write this script?
Yeah.
Then I'm on board.
Yeah, well, like, they can get, they can just use 90s Nine Inch Nails albums for the soundtrack. And then directed and written by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, so that's a good sign, too.
Yeah, these guys are attached to a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. They were also approached about writing an Uncharted movie, so,
yeah.
And that never happened, so we'll see. But I think it sounds cool.
Yeah, I'm totally down. I'm
I'll watch it.
This story is fascinating. Sega was so hungry, you know, like, the Master System just didn't make a splash at all, and they retreated and then, like, quietly, like...
Plotted
and developed the Sega Genesis. And then back then, like, the consoles were, like, really different, and they were being marketed differently. It's not like now where, like, the PS3 and the 360 were pretty much very, very similar. They were positioned very differently back then.
Genesis was out quite a bit before the SNES, too.
Yeah, it's true.
Almost 2 full years, I think.
Yeah, and back then, these were pure gaming consoles. Like, they couldn't even play a CD, which didn't exist then.
Put a cassette tape in it?
Right. They had no other function but to play games.
These 90s commercials are so good.
I miss the comic book ads, like when they'd be all, like, just freaking crazy ass graphics and people and just faces.
You mean like comic book commercials? Or?
Yeah, like on the back of the comic book, you'd have the end of the thing when a kid would be like, whoa, freaking out playing whatever he's doing.
Anyway, I'll see that movie. Should we go opening night?
Yeah. Okay. Unless it conflicts with Paranormal Activity, then we gotta go.
That's true. We are gonna go see that Godzilla on opening night.
Oh, yeah.
That new Godzilla trailer is hot.
It looks so good.
Yeah. Let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like...
Just like... Kaneshika! Adidia! He wrote it in all caps.
Did.
Or she.
Yes.
Sony Santa Monica suffered layoffs yesterday.
Right.
Our friend here, Kanish, says Sony Santa Monica has been a very successful studio making blockbuster games like the God of War series, and it is owned by a corporate giant like Sony, but it has recently laid off a certain number of its employees. My question is, given the fact that even a hugely successful studio backed by a major company cannot withstand just a single underperforming game like God of War Ascension,
oh, Lord.
What possible incentive is there for truly gifted developers or designers to be a part of such an incredibly volatile industry? Do you guys think this uncertainty will drive away talent or prevent others to be from being part of the gaming industry?
Okay. So we're on the outside of this whole thing.
Yeah.
We don't know what teams people were laid off from. We don't know exactly... We don't know if it was related to one underperforming God of War. There's a lot of factors here that people take for granted.
The rumor is that the studio was working on two projects,
right.
And then one of those two projects got canceled.
Correct.
Right. And that's what caused these layoffs.
Right.
And whether that's a God of War game or not, who knows? Like it could have been whatever they were working on.
With the Battlestar Galactica guy. They brought over Battlestar Galactica writer. He was supposedly working on a project. Yeah, sci-fi project. Mm-hmm. You assume another God of War is in production.
Right. Sure. And so, you know, whichever one of those two projects, you know, we don't know. Maybe we'll find out more as time passes. But it's like you have these, from their perspective, it might seem like, yeah, they're owned by Sony. They had these hit games. And even they're not safe. Like that's not really the way that it went. Like all these personnel... were allocated to this one project, and then that project went away.
Yeah,
and so it's
there's no new project to move them to, therefore that goes away.
Sure.
And like you know, there's a bunch of stuff that is unrelated to the performance of a given game where budgets shift around in a big company like that, and suddenly money goes away, and they have to make cuts.
Yeah,
a lot of those, programmers, artists will be swooped up by other developers.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about with layoffs in the video game industry. That sadly they are. Part of the process now, right? Teams ramp up their size to get ready to launch. They launch the game, keep some people for DLC, lay everybody off because they go into pre-production for the next one, where a programmer might not be needed for quite some time.
Yeah, you don't need animation when you're in a year of pre-production,
exactly.
For example.
And so those people then get on with a different project. When you talk to most developers these days and you ask, what have you worked on? They go through a litany of things they've been down the road with. And it's kind of rare. You have to you do all these little projects here and there to work your way up to this one project you get on where you're not even on the project, you're part of a company, and you're like, you know, overseeing what they're doing or helping other developers, animators.
But is it a disincentive? Absolutely it is. There's a lack of stability.
Sure.
But, you know, a lot of people are in this business because they want to make games, and they'll suffer through that in order to do it.
I also think if you have design talent or, you know, talent in, you know, whatever your discipline is, being on a big team like that, I have friends that are on big teams that seem okay with it, but it just seems like what's your impact when you're one of 300 dudes making, you know, a God of War game or, you know, 1,000 dudes making an Assassin's Creed game? Yeah. Like, what's your individual contribution? Like, you're a human being that presumably has talent and, you know, these creative impulses, and then you're texturing, you know, rocks in, you know, the next Uncharted for a year.
So maybe they, you know, start their own studio and make the next Gone Home, right?
Yeah. Sure. That's why I definitely think these smaller team sizes are appealing from a development, at least from the standpoint of a developer. You know, it can be hard to make money at that too. But
a lot of those guys will that form those small companies are have been through the big development project mill and have picked up, you know, a bunch of experience that allows them to do that.
And go out with some like-minded friends and have a team size small enough that everybody can make a meaningful contribution to the finished product.
Yeah, and that's what happened with Gone Home.
Yeah.
Kanishk also says, many thanks for such an entertaining show. You guys truly are the View of the gaming world.
That's kind of a compliment, I think.
Yeah, we've been
how we self-identify.
That's a talk is what I said. I should probably go home.
This is Nate.
Nate Ahern, what's up? What's up with Microsoft?
He says, going to call upon your expertise here, Dan. He says,
I stand with Dan.
I have that.
I've never played a Thief game, so maybe I'm way off here, but from footage I've seen of the new Thief, it looks like the protagonist is using a compound bow. Yet,
I thought it was going to say mascara.
Yet it appears the game takes place in a Victorian era. Oh, compound bows weren't invented until the 1960s.
There's a bunch of stuff in this game that was not invented until way after. This game is not set in the real world.
Yeah,
like it's a, you know, alternate universe where they've got a bunch of electricity all over the place and these lights that you can't turn off. For some reason, you can't shoot these lights out with your bow with explosive arrows.
There's plenty of problems. Your answer.
So answer, magic.
Might have to suspend.
They have magic in this game, too.
Maybe it's like a steampunk bow.
Yeah. Could be a steam-powered bow. I'm not sure.
One more question here. This is from Mark Clifford. It says, long-time watcher, first-time emailer. I'm concerned for Justin.
What?
In the last Game Scoop, he looked very tired.
Oh, no.
When he's up to his neck in baby stuff, can I come fill in on the panel for him? You guys look like good crack. I'm Irish. Crack means fun.
No. Oh.
Thanks for. I'm glad he knew where that was gonna go. Yeah.
Damon, can you wear sick next time? It's February. It can't be that warm here. I think he means socks. I was just wearing short socks last time. I think my ankles were showing. But
can you also throw up on yourself?
You should keep in my mark. It has been really warm here actually in San Francisco. It's raining today, which kind of sucks. But it has been very warm here recently. And he says, does Marty play pro basketball? His shoes suggest he might, and are very out of place within the rest of his outfit. I imagine IGN is a chore for him, and he longs to shoot hoops all day when he's stuck in the office.
I want to see Marty duck.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Yeah,
he probably could.
He'd have to shave his beard.
So let's go back to your baby. It's coming.
Yeah.
How long before you quit IGN to get a better paying job to take care of the baby? Because it took Ryan Geddes...
No time at all.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
He didn't even... So my first day at IGN was his last day at IGN.
Yeah.
And he had just come back from his paternity leave.
Yeah.
So he let back, the company we all pay excited. Him to yeah, take yeah, his time yeah. off, and he said, "Nah,
it's a good move, baller."
He's a strategy gamer.
So it does give me some pause because this is not a job that's super easy to have when you have a family.
Yeah.
It's a job that is kind of your whole life in a lot of ways, and it's just not that easy to do. But then there's some people that seem to do it with no problem. Steve Lutz has, you know, a couple kids, and he has no problem with it at all.
I think that brings us to the end of another GameScoop. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Dan. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. My name is Damon, this is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.